You're listening to Help Me, I'm a Comedian, the show where we ask a comedian to come in and share an issue of pain from their life while a psychologist tries to help them through. I'm Ashwin Sidkar, and you're joined now by comedian Kat Davidson and psychologist Dr. Rachel Hannam. Hello to you both.
Hello.
Hey, Ashwin.
Kat, can we start with your story?
I suffer from panic attacks sometimes, and it's not all the time, and sometimes it's out of a clear blue sky, and sometimes I can see them coming. But it really is the most terrifying of experiences. It's physical, it's emotional, it's everything. But the physical is actually, I think, the scariest part.
What happens to you physically?
I think I go into fight or flight. So my heartbeat is off the chain, I sweat, and then I'm freezing, and then I'm hot. My thoughts race, I feel like the world is closing in around me. I feel scared of everything. Sometimes I'm completely immobilized or it's very hard to move. What's running through my head is just a litany of awful things. You're a terrible parent, which is my greatest fear. You're a bad wife. You're a hopeless comedian. You're terrible at everything you've ever done, and every decision you've ever made is awful and will always be awful because you are worth nothing.
When you're in that state, is there anything you can do about it?
Yes and no. Sometimes I can head it off a little. I can feel the storm coming, and I've learnt through some rather expensive therapy some of the signs and symptoms and to hit them early rather than sort of being like, oh, that's awkward, I don't really have time for that, and dealing with it in the worst of it. Because once it really hits, there's not much I can do other than write it out.
It's like there's a tipping point.
Yeah.
Once you pass that tipping point, what then? Do you have to wait it out? How long does it last?
It depends. If there's alcohol involved, I've discovered, much to my chagrin, that I can no longer drink to excess, mm-hmm. because it will often set off one in the morning.
The next morning.
Mm-hmm. Even if there's nothing's gone wrong.
Yeah.
I was at home, I didn't do anything wrong, no one got upset, I didn't even overdo it that much. But there's something that doesn't process
You're
properly.
Not alone in that. I've heard
really?
That before.
It's a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing.
It's annoying.
Yeah.
And that they can last longer, because I think there is then the chemicals, it's harder for my brain to reset because I've hurt them. But the ones that come out of a clear blue sky or are tipped off by an event, they're usually only, although they feel like days, half an hour.
It feels like it's going to last forever, though, doesn't it?
Oh, my God, it's the worst feeling in the world.
Yeah.
But they can last for hours. For the rest of the day, I'm pretty useless. I'm wiped out. I have to be very careful what I do.
What do you tend to do when you're in the thick of it? What actions do you take?
Cry. I try and reach out, even though it's very difficult to express what I'm thinking or feeling, but I've got a few friends that have them. Mm-hmm. So if I can, and sometimes it's only by text, I can't talk without wailing, I will text a friend.
Yes.
And say, I'm having a panic attack. Please tell me this ends. Because that's often what I need to
reassurance.
Hear. This, it will end. You're mm-hmm. going to be okay. This isn't forever. Because it really does feel like this is my new reality now.
Yes.
This is how it's always going to be.
Utterly consuming.
Sometimes it takes just a person to remind me of the things. Are you breathing?
Mm.
What can you see around you?
Mm.
Have you had some water? Can you move? Get up. If you can, get up. Because it does, it's a thing you least want to do, but it helps a lot.
The thing you least want to do is often the thing you need to do.
Yeah. You need to get up. You need to get walk into the sunlight, even if it's at home and when no one can see you and how messy you look because you've been crying or whatever. Try and get up off the bed.
Mm. Remove yourself from the situation.
And try and turn, it's, again, a really difficult thing to do, but try and turn the thoughts off or stop obeying them.
Yes.
They're going to tell you awful things.
Yeah.
It's not real. Don't act on them and just try and not judge them and let them flow through.
Mm.
It's a chemical storm. It will end.
What advice would you give to somebody who's only maybe just had one or two and doesn't thinks that they're going crazy or doesn't know what to do? What advice would you have?
Oh, yeah, I've been there. It took me a while to seek help because that's truly what I thought. I mean, I'm a really strong person. I'm a comedian. I'm used to braving high levels of anxiety and
vulnerability
and unexpected situations. It's what I do. I'm a communicator for a living. So why can't I? What is this? What is this awful, weak, horrible thing? So my advice to them would be, you are not alone. This is normal in a way. I mean, it isn't that your body is putting you through this, but it also is. I mean, it's your body's reacting to something. There is something amiss. It's not your fault. You're not weak or bad or stupid, but you do need to figure it out. And while you're well, because you are no shot when you're in it.
In the midst of it.
So try and seek it. If you can, see a professional. Mm. But even if not, reach out to friends that you know are a bit anxious themselves.
It's more common than most people realise, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. When I asked a few friends, they were like, oh, sister, got the T-shirt, wearing it now.
Yeah. And it's not just women.
Absolutely.
Plenty of men have panic attacks.
No, absolutely.
Well.
They do have a male friend who gets them. And he is so confident and he's successful and he's beautiful and he's intelligent. He's all of the things that we're taught you don't feel anxiety about. But it doesn't work that way.
I've had a similar experience where I was performing to a group of 300 people back when the Albion Comedy Club was open, and that was fine. And then I had to give a small talk to six business people the next day, and I could feel my voice getting higher pitched and my body was tensing up. And I was like, why am I getting scared of this? I did the other thing. And it was almost nice to be reminded that you're not invulnerable, just to develop a more realistic assessment of yourself.
Absolutely. I've done comedy while having a panic attack because I have, this show goes on. I'm booked to do it. I've got to do it. But as soon as I set foot on stage, the noise quietened. I don't know if it's a different part of the brain you use when you walk on stage or the fact that I had such a clear purpose. But the Dr. Theatre thing kicked in, and whilst it still bubbled away and it certainly didn't kill it, I got it done. And I didn't, according to people who were there, I didn't look nervous. I seemed fine. And then I got handled it afterwards.
That's a good message for the audience, isn't it? We often magnify the problems in our own head, whereas other people don't really notice the inner turmoil that we're going through.
And it's such a judgment comment. I've helped other people through panic attacks and depression and anxiety and all of the things that us humans have, and I never have thought less of them or judged them or any. I'm all heart when it comes to that, but when it comes to me, judge yes.
Yes. Can you tie these panic attacks that you're having to anything that happened in your childhood?
Yes, but only with help. It wasn't automatic. My dad is a truck driver, was away a lot. He's also an alcoholic, recovering now since 2000 with incredible strength. So there was issues of abandonment, issues of not feeling enough because I was too young to understand. So, you know, that dad had to work and it certainly wasn't personal, but it feels personal when you're seven. So there was a bit of that I hadn't processed. There's a bit of history in the family on mum's side of anxiety. So you might help me out with the genetics on that, whether that's a thing.
It's a thing. We are born with a genetic proneness or predisposition towards anxiety, towards depression, towards both for some people.
Oh, I got the perfect storm on both sides.
Yeah.
Also a long history on both sides of addictive personality issues, which also, you know, doesn't necessarily keep you stable. So yes is the short answer.
You also had to be quite a friend to your mum quite early on. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, well, with dad away a lot, mum was lonely and she, as you would, reached out to me and we helped each other through. We were each other's support, me and my brother also, but the relationship between a mum and a daughter is often quite different and ours was, you know, we were the best of mates, which was both a wonderful and a difficult thing because we lent on each other in a way that I'm not sure I was able to process or handle because of my age, because I was so young. And I feel, I'm getting anxious talking about this because I... the thought of my mum feeling guilty or thinking that she's done anything wrong as a mum breaks my heart because she's just a ball of love.
Yeah.
But this was the situation we were in. And I think the processing of those sorts of emotions so young and those feelings of abandonment, those kind of things, I didn't have the skills or the maturity to do it. And I think some of that translated into anxiety and into feelings of not knowing necessarily how to handle my own feelings or how to connect with people with the concern that they might leave me. And that's travelled my insecurities in terms of people not wanting to stick around me. I'm 43 and...
comes into adulthood with absolutely. You, doesn't it? It's interesting. I was just talking with a client this morning about John Bradshaw's work and other, you know, amazing psychologists' work on shame and the connection between being, he uses the word exposure, exposed to situations at a young age which you're not ready for, which you don't have the skills for. It can be just as innocent as, you know, being expected to be able to be a comfort and confidant to your mum because she really needed that, but you're a bit little to really know what to do. And so there's a sequence that happens and it kind of mixes together, but the sequence includes, I want to be there, but I don't know exactly what to say or do right now. And in that, I don't know what to do or say, there's a sort of an isolation and a panic, and that can lead to a sense of shame later on in a child because, you know, they feel like they should know what to do or what to say. They want to fix it. They think they should be able to, but they also can't. They don't have the maturity and skills. So it can lead to this vicious cycle of sort of anxiety and shame.
And with Dad struggling with his illness as well, you know, it was difficult to connect with him. And some of that I think I took on myself, not understanding the nature of his illness and, you know, trying to connect with him sometimes and couldn't because he was drunk. Like, I feel disloyal speaking about it because he did the best he could.
Absolutely.
Everyone did the best they could.
They all did.
With the hand they were dealt.
And yet it's still important that you understand what happened and maybe that they understand. It's a dynamic. It's no one's fault.
You're listening to Help Me, I'm a Comedian on ABC Radio and hearing from comedian Kat Davidson and psychologist Dr. Rachel Hannam. I'm your host, Ashwin Sedkar.
In my early 20s, was probably angry and not really understanding why. I took quite some distance from them when I left home. Nothing was wrong, no one hurt anyone, but I just felt something. Mm. And now I'm a little bit older and I'm a parent. I have a better understanding of it and I just want to wrap them up and cuddle them, but I also have to process what the truth of that was.
Rachel, what are some ways that we can resolve some of those dynamics that were formed in childhood?
I tend to notice a process that a lot of people go through, say when they start therapy, but I'm sure this is also the case for people who don't go to therapy. At first they'll come and say, you know, I had a wonderful childhood, my parents did the best they could, which actually ends up being their final analysis as well. Mm. But everything was fine and we didn't get abused and they're great parents. But I got all these issues, you know, I've got depression or I got anxiety. And then they sometimes, as they come to look back and understand the sequence of things throughout their life, they might go into blame. They might start getting angry and blaming one or both of their parents. And I see that as a quite a natural stage. But I also want to shepherd them out of that blame to more of an understanding rather than blame, you know, and accept a compassion for their parents. Their parents did the best they could. And once you become a parent, as you know, you do get quite a bit of compassion for what a tough gig it is to balance everything and
absolutely
meet your own needs and your children's needs. Hopefully they arrive at this compassion for themselves and others, with an understanding of the reality of what happened, which I think it's important not to deny what happened either.
Kat, how has that affected the way you've raised your daughter?
It's been such a massive learning curve, raising our daughter, because neither of us, my husband and I, both were quite passionate about not having kids. For different reasons. And then when I turned 35, my clock went off and we're having kids now. So we didn't spend a lot of time with children. It wasn't kind of part of the plan. So when she was born, we felt like an alien had descended. And I guess as a lot of parents do, you know, and then trying to figure out how to raise her and how to be the best parents we can be and how to make her the most incredible human being on the planet. And I have this constant worry as an anxious person anyway, but a constant worry that I'm not getting it right, because I see my parents as two people who raised us with all the love in the universe and took every intent to get it right and to raise us, you know, to be happy and well-grounded and all of those things. And I see that in some instances that's not what happened. And that terrifies me, because I then think, what am I going to hand down to her? My anxiety, my panic attacks, my depression, my, you know, I'm not necessarily going to get this right either. And my husband is really good at trying to balance that and saying, she's being raised with love, and we're going to stuff this up in 17 million different ways, but we're also going to raise a child who knows that she is adored.
Have you heard of the phrase, the good enough mother?
Yes.
Yes. Winnicott? Yeah. Yes. I always go back to that as a mother.
Yes.
I'm a good enough mother.
I also want to give her the opportunity to make mistakes and to
build
to
resilience.
Build resilience, because I teach university students who don't have resilience.
But I did mention I work for the ABC. We often get people who call in, and as you should, it's your broadcaster, go nuts. But people call in, and one old lady kept calling up and going, excuse me, excuse me, because if you're very old, you whistle. Excuse me, you never give the temperature for kombucha. I thought about it, that you're quite right, ma'am, we don't. But she would call on a daily basis, because I'm not sure she remembered she'd called the day before, bless her. And each day I would again explain that we don't give the weather in Caboolture because there's no weather vane in that spot. So we do give it, though, for Redcliffe and sort of around, you know, areas around it, so perhaps she could average it. And every time I would do that, she'd go, don't be cheeky! So I was filling in one day at about 4 a.m, and she kept calling up saying interview, and eventually I just thought, look, I'm going to, it is your broadcaster, it's your ABC, it's your 8 cents, so I'm going to give it one for her. So I said, you're listening to Kat Davidson, ABC Local Radio, Queensland. It's 5 degrees in Logan, 7 in Ipswich, it's 4 degrees in Redcliffe, and 6 on both the Golden Sunshine Coast. In Caboolture right now, it's 47 degrees. She took 5 minutes to call. She's going, it's not 47 degrees. And I said, see, you didn't need me.
Are there any principles, though, for anyone listening out there who has become a new parent, of what works, how authoritarian to be, how friendly to be with your child? Are there some general rules that we've learned about what makes for raising a healthy child?
There are lots, I think. A lot more than we have time to cover. But one that comes to mind, because I was talking this morning with a client about it, and I thought of it just before when you were saying something, Kat. Children start protesting at about the age of 18 months, as you would remember. They have many protests about things. And some experts say that the way we deal with our children's protests is very important to their development. So as soon as they start having a voice and a sense of either I don't want that or that's not okay by me, and expressing emotions such as anger and frustration or fear or sadness, how we handle that is super important, because we want to walk that fine line between, you know, building resilience. We don't want children who are going to fall apart at the drop of a hat, but we also don't want to do the old school parenting thing of previous generations and shut it down so that the child gets the message that my feelings don't matter and I don't have needs and I'm not allowed to have needs, which I think previous generations very much got that message. And so there's a lot of shame that builds, because it's like, I feel ashamed for having needs and now I'm expected to know what to do and I don't, so I must be an idiot, rather than the adults are expecting too much of me. You know, children internalize. The vast majority of children would rather see their parents as gods and perfect caring beings and protectors. Of course, that helps them feel safe. So anything that's going wrong out there, they will blame on themselves very easily. I think if we're aware of that as parents, we can help correct children's perceptions. I think a big thing is saying sorry. I've always practiced this with my children. If I lose my cool, I'll go back and say, I don't like how I reacted before. I did overreact. Not my best self. I'm sorry. I want to model the fact that you can repair a relationship after a rupture so that they take that on board and don't internalize it. But if they've done something wrong, also hold them accountable for that. Mm. So it's walking that fine line and teaching them to be able to express their emotions, which is not the same as giving in to children.
It's a particularly tricky thing if you're not sure about your, like for me, if I'm having an anxious, I'm not always anxious, but sometimes I am. And then I think, am I just filtering through that? And am I processing what she's doing through my weird filter? And what effect is that going to have on her? And then I get more anxious thinking about that. And I'm learning, I'm trying to learn that the good enough thing, and also just being honest with her. Like I spoke to my psychologist about that and was like, how do I make sure I don't inflict this on her? And she said, be honest with her.
Yes.
Mummy's feeling a bit tired today.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, mummy had a really rough day at work, and that doesn't make it her fault. So if I sounded a little bit short with you, it is absolutely nothing to do with you. And
I agree.
And I'm sorry.
I call that taking your kids backstage, you know, taking them behind the curtains to see what's going on so that they know that it's a result of, you know, something you're struggling with, mm. and they won't personalize it, hopefully. So
hopefully. And humans have, and then they hopefully get to see, I don't want to do it too often because I don't want to, she's not my sounding board.
Yes.
And I don't want her to feel responsible for how I feel, but.
But you're human and you need her to know that.
So it's okay sometimes that we're not okay. I recall my mum and dad trying very hard not to show if they were struggling. And I could see it, but and sometimes they'd talk about it, but only if it was impossible to ignore. But I would watch them try and temper it down. If mum was upset about something or if dad was kind of dealing with something to do with his disease, again, like we were talking before, I wouldn't have known how to handle it. But it also does have an impact if you can see something and not understand it. Mm. Whereas if I internalize it, say, you know, there is something going on, you're okay, I'm okay. Rather than just have a kid be like, what is that? Did yes. I do that? What is happening?
And the confusion, they can easily swallow that right down and ends up feeling like it's about them.
But and learning, oh, we don't talk about that? All right then. A couple of times with our daughter, she's refused to do something or she's just being difficult. I'm using quotations you can't see in that. And it triggers me. I'm like, what is your problem? And if I actually ask her, sometimes she'll tell me. Why don't you want to wear those shoes or why won't you put your socks on? And the answer is not because I want to annoy you. It's because they itch my feet or it's because it's hot and my feet, I don't like the feeling of having them on without having that conversation. Or you're thinking, the conversation in your head is, I just want to bug you and make you late for work.
And I think that is a very new thing just in the last few decades of asking children, what's going on? What do you feel? Up until the 70s, in children's hospitals, in the terminal illness section of children's hospitals, so this is what, 30, 40 years ago, they didn't tell children, the doctors and nurses were told not to tell children that they were dying.
Oh, my God.
And then some researchers went and said, what if we asked the children? And they did, and said to the children who were dying, and no one had told them, what's going on? What do you think's happening? And the children said, I think I'm dying. But no one's talking about it, so it must be really. And the researchers found out this is really not a good way to handle this situation. We'd better be honest with these children and explicit, you know. So this secrecy and silence stuff has been going on for so many generations, and it's, to me, really cool that it's changing.
You're listening to ABC Radio and Help Me, I'm a Comedian. You're hearing from Dr. Rachel Hannam and comedian Kat Davidson. We've been talking so far about anxiety. Kat, in 2011 you had quite a difficult year that also triggered PTSD. Can you explain what happened there?
I was on air for the ABC as an emergency broadcaster in Toowoomba when the floods happened. I gave the first evacuation warning. I was very new to emergency broadcasting. the studio in Toowoomba looks out onto the main street, and I'm broadcasting and watching cars being swept along in the flood. They got in a more experienced broadcaster as soon as they could, but then I was producing, which meant I was taking phone calls from people who were in mortal peril and were asking questions about where do I go and you know, tell my wife I love her and that sort of stuff. And there was counselling available afterwards. A lot of the people up there, we kind of kept in touch with each other. We were stuck up there as well, as you may recall. Toowoomba was shut off for really hazy, which apparently is a thing, on the details. There's a few details I'm crystal clear on and a few that I have real trouble recalling from that time. Mm. So I think it may have been 3 days we were shut in up there. And I didn't process it. I thought I did. I knew it was terrible, but I wasn't a first responder. I was never in mortal peril. I wasn't one of those people who were watching the rain come down and scared they were going to die. So I didn't really feel I had a right to feel...
But it was vicarious trauma, and that's a thing.
Apparently it is. Mm. It took a while, because then I had my daughter in 2012, which was sort of traumatic as well, and it kind of compounded. And I found myself having anxiety. The heavy rain would really freak me out. I had gigs in Toowoomba, and I had panic attacks coming back, and I didn't know why, but it was driving up the range.
Yes.
And seeing the signs to the towns that I knew were underwater and that I remember getting the calls from.
What other symptoms did you have of PTSD?
Rage, anxiety.
Dreams or flashbacks?
Dreams and flashbacks. An inability to disengage. If there was a news report on it, I would either watch it fixedly or not be able to watch it at all. Feelings of guilt.
What's been most helpful in recovering from that post-traumatic stress stuff?
Understanding that it's a normal reaction.
Yeah.
Not feeling ridiculous or guilty for taking on a tragedy that was not my own. That's kind of how it felt for a long time.
Yeah.
And understanding that it is, my part of it at least, my participation in it was traumatic. Doesn't take away from anyone else's. And then that kind of allowed me to process it and to understand that my own baggage also played into that. I didn't come at it with a clean slate. I already had some anxiety going on. And then the compounding of my daughter's birth on top of it. And then getting professional help. Hmm. That was, I would not be here today. I don't have suicidal ideation, and so I don't want to overstate that, but I would not be as well as I am or as upright.
If you hadn't got professional
Absolutely
help.
Absolutely not.
Rachel, what's the best way to deal with a traumatic event in your life? How much should we dive into it and process it, and how much should we let it go? What's the balance to be struck?
I think some people don't necessarily realise they've experienced trauma early in life or more recently. Some people think it's fear for one's life or another's life, and that's definitely what you experienced in that situation, Kat. Other people say it's just a situation that overwhelms our ability to cope. So we're in full fight flight, then we're in a kind of freeze response because we don't know what to do. People think, oh, trauma's a car accident or being in war, but it's really what happens inside of you. Often trauma will bring up old trauma as well. And in fact, one of the biggest predictors of PTSD is having had previous trauma because of that cumulative effect that you spoke about. Getting professional help is almost always the answer. Many GPs now are trauma informed. So people, that would be a good first place for people to start, is by going to their GP. General self-care is really important if you're experiencing post-traumatic stress, as well as getting the tools and support. You need to do what you can to make sure that you are not drinking and drugging too much, that you are getting some sleep. Again, GP can be helpful for these sort of issues.
Right. Being in the arts probably doesn't hurt as well, if you can have a source of expression.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's the most cathartic thing in the world.
Yeah.
The feeling of being able to step on stage and reclaim my power and make people laugh, like just yes. bring some joy into the world, even if there's a bit of darkness happening in my soul.
You've been listening to Help Me, I'm a Comedian. I'm Ashwin Sedkar, and you've been hearing from comedian Kat Davidson and psychologist Dr. Rachel Hammond.